WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of Pulse of the Nation. I'm Braden Vick, your host of the podcast, and today we're going to be going back to a few weeks ago when the first Republican debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin was held. It was broadcast by Fox News. 8 candidates were there. None of them are going to become president because the presumptive GOP nominee, Donald Trump, was not there because he was focused on his criminal cases, including the one in Fulton County where he had his mugshot taken. But there are 8 other candidates that are potentially vying to be his vice president. It is a possibility that none of them will win, but there were 8 debaters, and we'll see how they did. We're going to start off with the, well, least polling candidates. I don't know how to say it. Well, the candidates that have been polling the worst that somehow still made the debate. And we'll start off with the North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who had a pretty strong debate performance, especially in the first half. He talked about, his, drilling oil because, especially, and the reason he talks about this, not because just because the Republican Party is in favor of more fossil fuels, but in North Dakota, especially in North Dakota Republican politics, oil and fossil fuel interests have a heavy hand, especially in western North Dakota, where there's been an oil boom, especially I think it's the Bakken oil fields, especially around Williston and areas like that. So Doug Burgum really leaned in on the drilling, leaned in on energy independence from China, and generally had a pretty strong debate performance, especially in the first half. And his main focus was on China, beating China, being energy independent from China, that sort of stuff, send more ships or more naval ships to Taiwan. And it was really impressive, especially considering the fact he took an L before the debate even happened because he suffered a pretty severe leg injury while playing pickup basketball the day before. I think he tore a ligament in his knee or something like that that almost took him out of action, but he decided to man up and be on the debate stage anyways. Impressive given the circumstances. I didn't think his second half was as strong as his first half. I don't know if that was because he didn't really have much time to speak or what, but all in all, it's not something that's going to get him the presidency, but potentially he might could hope to be Secretary of Energy, maybe? Maybe. I don't know. Someone who's not going to get a cabinet position is Asa Hutchinson, the governor of Arkansas. Now, you wouldn't think that a governor of a state like Arkansas, or former governor in this case, he's no longer the governor, you don't think someone from that state would be one of the most vociferously anti-Trump voices. And that's kind of about all he did. He talked about his time in the DEA and, border issues. And, boring. No one knows who you are, Asa, and if they do, they don't like you, okay? And something that I should mention is there was a huge question about abortion. Would you support a federal abortion ban? Wouldn't you? Doug Burgum wouldn't. He cited 10th Amendment states' rights. Asa Hutchinson said he'd be fine with it. And that's something that I'm going to get a bit more into as I grade these debate performances. And they're not like letter grades. But if you're getting a boring, you're probably getting more of a D rating for me. Asa Hutchinson, I'm surprised he hasn't dropped out yet, essentially. Francis Suarez dropped out because he didn't make the debate. You're not that far off from him, Asa. Just drop out, for the love of God. Speaking of candidates who should probably drop out, Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina. It was poor. Nah, he didn't have a lot of stage presence, and not only that, his story and his life experiences aren't exactly in line with what the Republican Party base wants or what the donors want. And this goes for something outside of the debate. So he's single, he's a bachelor. He says recently, he has a Christian girlfriend, but you wouldn't know her, she's from Canada, yada, yada, yada. And it's led to some people thinking that he's gay. which I'm not going to shy away from this conversation, is the fact that, you know, a lot of people that may be gay aren't comfortable with coming out, especially someone in Tim Scott's position. If he comes out as gay, kiss goodbye to any chances of rising in the political world. And I'm just going to be speaking from a more, you know, opinionated stance than more of an analytical stance. But, like, they're not going to support you, first off, because, I mean, let's be honest with the way racial voting works. A black Republican isn't going to exactly get far in a presidential race, at least not in 2023. Not only that, but you don't have charisma either. This doesn't... Now, I'm not even talking about the characteristics of the base. I'm talking about the characteristics of you as a character. And you were miles behind Nikki Haley's debate performance. That's something I'll get into later. But you just kind of screwed the pooch almost, Tim Scott. And that's something that you can't do. You're at 2% in the polls. You need something to get people to be inspired by your campaign. And that did not happen here. That did not happen here. So, Tim Scott, you get a D-. Like, just not good whatsoever. Now, one of the more interesting characters and personalities is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And if you know him, he's the guy who wants to follow Donald Trump everywhere he goes, pretty much. One of the more vociferous anti-Trump messengers, who has been rumored to be potentially doing pretty well in a state like New Hampshire or New England type politics, even though he's from a mid-Atlantic state like New Jersey, where those politics could potentially have a bit of a voice. Now, he did start out with a tough on crime message. Yes, the Republican Party, what did you expect? And he campaigned on good governance, reducing spending, yada, yada, yada. But he was obviously one of the more combative candidates, as you would expect. He and Vivek Ramaswamy went after each other. Like, one of the most famous lines from the debate was when Chris Christie called Vivek Ramaswamy ChatGPT, comparing him to essentially just robotic, you know, practice lines. Like, oh, like, you're not a genuine politician, you're just AI. And that was something, that was one of the funniest moments of the debate, I'm not gonna lie. But you're going from that, of course, attacking Hunter Biden, whoopee, the Republican Party in the House of Representatives is trying to impeach Joe Biden over, I think, like, I'm not sure what they're trying to impeach him on, something related to his son, Burisma, maybe. I don't know, we'll learn more as we go on, but that's neither here nor now. And Chris Christie obviously attacked Donald Trump during the debate. And what was interesting to me is that he got cheers and, well, some booing, or actually a lot of booing. But it was really interesting, the crowd that was there seemed to be a bit more favorable to candidates like Christie and Nikki Haley and Doug Burgum, who could be seen on the more moderate side of things in the Republican Party these days. But, like, I was thinking during the debate, like, yeah, you're getting cheers, interesting. But they don't reflect the GOP party electorate. Like, you have to assume that the people that showed up in Wisconsin are going to be a lot more college-educated. They're going to have higher college education rates, probably higher wealth than the average Republican Party voter. And the average voter is not going to be someone that is going to go for these types of candidates. That's the voter that's going to go for Donald Trump. And Chris Christie, you can break from Donald Trump all you want. That's not going to win you a primary. Like, he had a C-plus debate performance. Like, he had some moments. But you have to realize who your party base is. If you're running for president, you cannot be running as the guy that opposes the guy that 6/10 of the GOP primary base would crawl over 1,000 miles of broken glass for. And you can't win like that. And I think maybe Chris Christie knows he can't win like that, but is only doing this because he hates Donald Trump so much, which, if true, offers a bit more nuance to the reason why I decided to run for president. Maybe he wants a cabinet position. Don't let him near Secretary of Transportation, though. He has a history of bridges. It's not good. And again, very conservative on immigration. Chris Christie continued to attack Vivek Ramaswamy during the debate, and that's something I'll be discussing in a little bit. But Chris Christie, I mean, he represents a politics of the past, a politics of like the late 2000s, early 2010s. And that is not something that the average GOP primary voter wants. And that's also the main problem I have with Nikki Haley's debate performance. Like, don't get me wrong. It was, if you take debate performances, Nikki Haley's debate performance was the strongest. And it wasn't particularly close. Because Nikki Haley is a Mitt Romney-style politician. And to which, like, she is pretty charismatic. She is styled herself as sort of, you know, this sort of Republican feminist candidate that seemed to be doing pretty well. A candidate more tailored for, you know, people with higher wealth, higher college education. But that's not what the Republican Party is now. Despite that, Nikki Haley kind of owned Mike Pence and Vivek Ramaswamy a couple of times, especially on the abortion issue, on the fact that Vivek doesn't have any government experience. And also, yeah, she attacked Shine on the climate thing, but the abortion thing is something that really got to me. And I'm like, this is really interesting for a candidate of the Republican Party to speak like that, like the way she did on abortion. She first attacked the fact that, oh, unelected justices are making this decision for the entire country. And it's more of a states' rights thing than anything else. But it's interesting to see her come from that angle. And she said, not that she opposed a federal ban, but that the federal ban was unlikely. And that essentially, she told Mike Pence that you don't have the votes for a federal abortion ban, which is correct. There are not 60 votes to bypass the Senate filibuster, which the Democrats would obviously use despite going to town against the filibuster for the past two or three years at this point. Although, to be fair, that was mostly because I think they don't like Manchin, just a hunch, or Sinema. But that's the conversation for another time. And she attacked tough bans because she knows. Like, she saw it happen in 2022. She saw it's happening in elections across the country where the abortion issue, the Dobbs issue, is something that has helped Democrats win elections. She noted in her campaign announcement video that the Republican Party has only won the popular vote once in the 21st century. They haven't won it since 2004. 2024, it's going to come 20 years since the GOP's won the popular vote. And based on everything we see right now, that streak is unlikely to be stopped in 2024. So Nikki Haley is trying to come off as the electable candidate. Like, maybe be Trump's vice president to calm down, you know, sort of the more conservative-leaning suburban voters, to try and keep them in the Republican Party's camp as opposed to them ditching the GOP for the Democrats, as happened to great effect in Arizona in both 2020 and 2022. And generally, she had a pretty strong debate performance. She mentioned, you know, growing vocational schools, which I thought was very interesting and something that is probably going to happen across the country, something more cross-partisan, but something I felt I needed to note. But we'll go over to Mike Pence. Now, he's the guy that came to UA in the spring semester of 2023, and gotta tell y'all, he's cooked. He's completely cooked. And his focus is to be the evangelical anti-abortion candidate who supports a federal ban but also wants to be a good governance guy. And he attacked Vivek Ramaswamy for essentially having about as much political experience as that, well, let's see, as that Prince poster right there to my right. Maybe as a Strawberry poster is more like it. Because I think Prince had more political experience. Good Lord. But, yeah, essentially what he said, Vivek Ramaswamy, if he was president, would essentially be doing on-the-job training as president, is the line that he said. He invoked Jesus a lot of times as he wants to mold the Republican Party into a Christian Democratic-style party, basically Christian democracy. You have Christian Democratic parties all over, especially Europe, especially in Germany is the most famous example of it. And, yeah, Mike Pence focused his attacks on Vivek Ramaswamy. They both got their barbs in. Vivek cooked Mike Pence, but then Mike Pence cooked Vivek back. And then Nikki Haley roasted Mike Pence. And, like, he picked it up in the second half, not gonna lie. But his first half was, oh, good Lord. He had his ups and downs, and I gotta tell you, he's cooked, not just because of the debate performance, which I'll give a C- to. But let me tell you, like, you're not going to win the votes of the very same people who support the guy that tried to get you hanged. And you were his vice president. And he's not picking you to be his vice president either. So why are you running? Like, why are you running? Like, I know you want to fill a niche in the Republican Party that exists. But a lot of the evangelical voters are going to Donald Trump. Like, for a lot of these candidates, it's like, why are you running? Just why? Why are you running for president? What are you trying to get out of this? Like, for some, it's like, oh, you know, you want a cabinet position. Maybe you want to become more of a national star in politics. Maybe you want to combine the two of them, kind of like Pete Buttigieg did in 2020. Then he gets the Secretary of Transportation nod. Maybe that's something that Vivek Ramaswamy is trying to be. Maybe he's trying to get out of being compared to Andrew Yang. Maybe he's trying to be compared more to a Pete Buttigieg, one of the fastest growing stars in his respective party's politics, and maybe get a lucrative cabinet position, and maybe trying to make a future run for president. And Vivek, oh boy. Now, if you want to take a look at, there's two sides to this. If you want to take a look at debate performance, he was a clown. But if you want to take a look at appealing to the broader electorate, I think Vivek did the best job. Because he knows 6 in 10 GOP voters, as I said earlier, would crawl over broken glass for Donald Trump. And Vivek decided, you know what, I'm going to be the Donald Trump stand-in. And I think it worked. Because right now, in a lot of polls, he's polling neck and neck with Ron DeSantis. And in a few polls, he's actually overtaken him. Now, there was a question on whether, you know, online polls overestimate Vivek Ramaswamy. But that's a conversation for another time. Now, he's clearly practiced his lines, his opening lines at the beginning. And the crowd generally seemed to like him in the opening bit. He did get booed a lot, though, for some of the most outlandish statements that he made. He screamed out, drill, baby, drill, and defund the IRS. He called his political opponents super PAC puppets, essentially trying to say, I'm the only guy that's speaking honestly about the situation, trying to essentially do a Trump 2016 campaign. And he even, let me talk about this for a second. He said on that debate stage that climate change is a hoax. I gotta tell you, climate change is not a hoax. Have you felt what is going on outside in Tuscaloosa or wherever you're watching over this summer? It has been scorching hot. And you want to say that climate change is a hoax. He got booed loudly for it, as well you would expect. Maybe not because the people there believe the climate change is a hoax, but that he was acting like a clown. And the people in the debate stage might not like it. The audience might not like it. But he knows where the GOP party base lies. He wants to get a cabinet position. He wants to be a future pick for the presidential nominee. And he knows where he knows how to do it. Like, he's a very smart guy, don't get me wrong. And he's trying to see where he would best fit in the Republican Party. How should he run his campaign? And he's just decided to be the Indian version of Donald Trump. And it's paying off. It's paying off. He's being talked about as a potential vice presidential pick for Donald Trump because of this. Now, he speaks to more like, oh, we have a national identity crisis, you know, and he, you know, the whole, you know, mental health thing, something like, and things like that. and saying that the American people need something to latch on to. They need sort of more of a... Well, he did use the term revolution at the end, but it's sort of a... How do I say it? It's sort of more... He wants to be bombastic to rile the American people up. Says they need to believe in something. They need to believe in a conservative agenda. And they also need to believe in Vivek Ramaswamy taking shots at Mike Pence and Chris Christie all debate long, which he did to good effect. I think that overall, he is one of the main winners of the presidential debate. Speaking of the opposite of winners, losers. Oh, Ron DeSantis. Oh boy. I talked yesterday about his presidential campaign flailing around, and I could do a 2-hour-long episode about this whole situation with the DeSantis campaign. And again, like I said, it started when he botched his Twitter Spaces announcement. I guess they now call it X Spaces. I don't know. But an X is what we probably need to put through his campaign because... I mean, he knew he had to come in with energy at the beginning. I will give you that. So he decided to try and be a much more energetic version of himself. And that's good and all, but everybody ignored him. Like, nobody sees you as a threat. And you're supposed to be the guy with the best polling, the best donors, the best financial situation. And they're ignoring you in favor of some random CEO from Cincinnati. Okay? The guy's barely old enough to even run for president, and he's getting far more of the attention than Ron DeSantis ever did. Like, seriously. Like, what is this? Like, you're trying to come in with, you know, the experience, the governor of Florida. Essentially, one of the more famous lines he said was he would absolutely support an order in invasion of Mexico for the drug cartels, which is absolutely ridiculous. If you're invading a country, if you're doing military operations in a country without their consent, that's called war. Like, you literally have done an act of war on another country. And considering the fact that whichever administration in Mexico, whether it be the López Obrador administration or likely to be the Claudia Sheinbaum administration, those administrations are not going to take kindly to bombs being exploded in their country by American fighter jets and bombers and whatever we can get our hands on. Like, oh, to stop the drug cartels. Well, congratulations, you're now in a war with Mexico. Is this the 1840s again or what? Or 1850s? Whatever the U.S.-Mexican War was. We don't need a second one. Also, congratulations. Those gains that you made in South Texas and amongst Latina communities in the Southwest, congratulations, because they're gone if you invade Mexico. Like, this is getting ridiculous at this point. Like, like, seriously, he got flustered. He talked about George Soros. He tried to lay in these key words that maybe a Trump electorate might grab onto. But it was listless. He was pretty listless. A D-minus grade I would give to him if I were giving grades like a stuffy high school English teacher. Like, the guy's cooked. Like Mike Pence, he's cooked. For a whole host of reasons, but, like, because Ron DeSantis didn't exactly show out, you're done. You are done. So overall, who do I think were the winners? We'll conclude this quickly. So Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley, I thought, were the winners. Vivek did the best in terms of being closer to what the Republican Party base wants. Nikki Haley did the best in terms of electability. I also thought there was a pretty decent showing from Doug Burgum. Who were the worst performers? Let's see. Ron DeSantis, Asa Hutchinson, Mike Pence, and Tim Scott. They all had very weak debate performances. Chris Christie was middle of the road, ups and downs, yada, yada, yada. But why does this matter anyways? None of these guys are going to become the president in 2024. None of them. What are you hoping for? Donald Trump to die or something? Hoping that he drinks one too many Diet Cokes, eats one too many Big Macs? That's not how this is going to happen, okay? Like, I have said this from the beginning of the podcast, and I am going to scream it until the nominated convention in Milwaukee. Unless Donald Trump dies, he is going to be the GOP nominee. And you can't hope for that if you're any one of those other candidates, especially the ones who didn't make the debates, who have less hope of being the GOP nominee than I do, for God's sakes. Like, you can't hope for that, because you can't rely on that to launch your political career. That's not something that's going to happen. And if Donald Trump were to die, then Vivek Ramaswamy would probably get it over Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley in this hypothetical. So, you have a presidential debate where none of the people on there, on that debate stage, have a shot at being president. Nobody has a shot at that stage. No one. They're hoping to be Trump's vice president or something. Who knows? But yeah, there's going to be a second debate in, I believe, a couple of weeks in Simi Valley, California at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. I'll be doing reactions to that. And afterwards, in, I believe, the middle of late October, actually, the rumors are, it's not confirmed at this point, but there is very likely going to be a third GOP presidential debate held right here. It's going to be held at the University of Alabama campus, as has been reported by CIMA 4. NBC News is looking at broadcasting that presidential debate. A venue has not been selected. Personally, I've been looking around. They probably wouldn't do the student center at the third floor. They probably do something like the Galloway Theater in I believe Rowan Johnson Hall or somewhere along those lines. But yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see if Donald Trump shows up to any one of these debates. The indications are that he's probably not going to. But if he does, then we will obviously let y'all know through our Instagram account. So that is going to end Season 2, Episode 2 of Pulse of the Nation. Thank y'all for listening. Have a great day, and roll tide.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.